So we'll get to number three, right?
We will do, we will skip around based on what people need. And we will try to also do some actual exercises, not just theory and talking, because otherwise you're simply not going to get it as well. So, as all things physical or metaphysical, when we do the exercises, mind what you feel. If we were doing, yoga, and you had a kindly rather than sadistic yoga teacher, they would probably tell you, there are both kinds, they would probably tell you things like, you know, yogi's choice or modify so that you don't have to kill yourself doing it. So when we do the exercises, pay attention to what you're feeling and know when you need to stop or when you need to just take a breath, because the goal is to get to the end of the class and still be able to do the things, as opposed to somewhere partway through the class crapping out because you are recovering from the exercise we just did. And for some of you, it's like, no, this is cake. But that's also people like Becky, who's not here, who when we were on vacation in New Orleans, decided to make time during the vacation to do a 10K run in the morning, early afternoon, but out late, so. And she was fine. That's because she knows her body when she's capable of. Well, actually, one of the goals of any kind of energy management class is to become more aware of your energy and managing it better in the same way that we work to have body awareness and a sense of what we're capable of so that we can push ourselves just enough. Becoming awake and aware in your energy bodies is just as important as being awake and aware in your physical body. Okay? General rule. We will look at the outline, but honestly, a lot of it is going to be so that you have a way to structure your notes. But it'll start with the very beginning, opening, accepting, and connecting. You've probably been told this in other contexts, and if you haven't, it's the first lesson anybody should get, and that is that your batteries and your own personal energy are for your own personal use. In almost every case, when we try to work magic or do healing or move and manage energy, the energy that we should primarily be using, and I'm using that terrible word should, is the energy that is surrounding us at all times. When and how and why should you use your own energy? Because it takes a cost to turn things on and to get things going. In the same sense that it takes some of your personal energy to turn the key or press the buttons to get your car going. It takes X amount of energy to prime a pump or to start a siphon that is of your energy. But the quantity of your energy that you expend should only be the amount required to get the natural flow from elsewhere going. Are there times when you have to rely on your own energy? Sure. If you've ever had to hold your breath to swim underwater for a while, you know you can do it, but you also know that there is a clear limit as to how long you should do that before it becomes very bad for you, right? Okay, the same thing is true here. The other bit with energy is that it is healthier and better when it is flowing. Think of it like water. Water that is flowing is less likely to become troublesome than water that is stagnant and things can grow. When you are breathing, by the way, any people with asthma in the room? Just two? Damn. That's unusual. That's unusual. So I'm going to give this warning because it applies in a very good way, and some teachers get this one wrong, because we're going to be doing some breathing things. And sometimes some of the breathing exercises that are used for energy or used for magical purposes or used in yoga or meditation or a variety of things, people say it's bad if you have asthma because it might trigger asthma. Bullshit. I've heard it twice this week, actually, which is why I'm reminded of it. Here's the problem, how you hold it. If I ask, and don't do it unless you're ready, if I take in a breath and hold it, here's the thing. Are you holding by clamping in your throat, or are you holding it by holding it with your diaphragm?
Your corset.
Your corset. So, don't do it there. See, here's, most people have the tendency to clamp and close the breath at the throat instead of, like right now, I can hold my lungs full, and I'm still free up here. I'm holding it simply by holding my diaphragm pressure. You get the idea? whether it's holding on full or holding on empty. And breathing exercises can cause you to feel funny or trigger asthma attack in some people, but it's mostly because of the clamping rather than using the diaphragm to actually control the breath. Guess what? You will discover a similar sensation when it comes to moving, holding, and shaping energy. If you are clamping to hold energy, and you'll find how that feels like for you, then you are actually increasing the discomfort and reducing the level of control you have. You get the idea? Energy that's flowing is energy that's healthier and easier to move and control, whether it's breath or energy. Yes, ma'am.
Just as a pin to address at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
Back to your battery thing. Mm-hmm. For asking for a friend, if there's a like phone concept of where where your battery holds less charge over time because you don't ever use other energy, what's the replacement warranty protocol of how
so,
to?
So you want, so what you're really asking, I think, is there a memory effect? So
how do you hold your own charge anymore and you're completely, you just can't pull it out, how do you replace that?
We'll get to that.
Okay, that's why I just
I'm gonna actually use the breath one for a moment.
Okay.
Because it applies in other ways. So here a scene, I don't know, in a magazine, on video, about folks that are diving for pearls and they manage to hold their breath for ridiculous quantities of time in order to do that work and manage their pressure so that they don't have the same issues that you'd be expecting otherwise, right? Mm-hmm. It is not genetics.
No, it's true. Practice.
But let's add what the practice actually does. So if you're doing something like that, you need to actually have done the work to stretch to get flexible, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And those connective tissues stretch and become more fabulously capable of motion. Your lungs are mostly that kind of connective tissue.
Mm-hmm.
So that as people are training to do that kind of deep diving, if you take the deepest breath that you can take one more mouthful of air, and force it down, you've now made your lungs expand that tiny bit more beyond what you thought your diaphragm and lungs could handle, just like stretching. Mm-hmm. Please note it was a tiny quantity more. So by taking the deepest breath possible and then manually forcing a little bit more air and doing that on a daily basis, they build up a lung capacity which allows them to do that deep diving. If they stop doing that deep diving, their lungs shrink and go back to normal size. Just like if I stop doing stretching, what do you suppose will happen? I will only be able to get as far as my knee. So the thing with your capacity to hold energy is it's just the same as the capacity to stretch. You slowly can regain it, but you have to. By the way, this is also good news for everybody that you know in your life that may have COPD or emphysema. Physicians always say that they have nothing they can do, and that's also bullshit, because whatever remaining tissue they have can learn to stretch and expand, but they actually have to work on it the same way they would do any other exercise. You get the idea? Anyway, but your capacity to hold energy is also going to be all about creating the space within you, and that is something that you do gradually over time, because what happens if, we're going to skip this process, and we're going to have two or three people push you until your palms are flat on the ground instead of just touching your toes.
You strain a lot of muscles.
You're going to tear something.
And here's the thing, even though you may not be able to, at this moment, look up in an anatomy and physiology book which thing it is you tore, you're going to tear something in your aura. So the point is that when you begin to increase your energy work, if you do so gradually and consistently, you don't damage yourself. If you try to do the weekend warrior thing and do it all at once, what happens? The next day, I can't lift my arms. Or the energy equivalent thereof.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can't, nope, not doing any steps today. Can't go up the stairs. And I've experienced both those things, mm-hmm. both energetically and physically. But the big thing about opening is, are you worthy to receive? I'm going to say that there's also a psychological component to all energy work. If you don't believe that you have a right to have that energy, you're not going to let it in. If you don't believe that you're going to use it well, you might have some other part of you, some other little voice inside you saying, nope, nope, nope. So the other thing is that opening to allow more access to your own power and energy is like any other kind of empowerment. There's a psychological component to it. There's an emotional component to it as well. So gaining trust that you will use what you have well is part of the work as well. Make sense? And we're going through these fast so we can do other stuff. So accepting is another thing. I've often seen that, and I'm as guilty of it as any other human being, but when it comes to this kind of work, it's a little different. Are you willing to accept help? Are you willing to ask for help? Because a lot of times, part of the process of doing magical work, energy or work or whatever, is actually accepting and asking for help from either the natural forces that are around us or from specific beings that you work with, and allowing them to actually assist in the process of collecting and moving that energy. And I'm going to add one other little thing in there. You are a colony. Your whole environment. Your whole environment. So, and you do the biological thing, and then you'll see why it works energetically as well. So if we actually were to do a census of the number of cells inside this form, your form, you would find that there are more non-human cells than human cells. They're smaller, so it doesn't look like that should be the case, but the number of organisms that live on your skin, that live in your gut, that live in your blood, that live in your lungs, that live in your breath, the total number of cells in your body that are non-human exceed the human cells. And indeed, we're finding out more and more that frankly, each of your cells that you count as your own has a little invader in it from the earliest days of life called the mitochondria, that's also not part of you either. Right?
Depends on how you define you.
And that's the thing. We are also energetically made up of, and I'm going to use this symbolically because it's a useful system, the four elements. So when we talk about the four elements and we talk about elementals, beings of those four elements, yeah, you also are made out of beings of the four elements. You get the idea? You can't access the powers of the elements fully until you realize that part of the power of the four elements that lives within you, it's part of you in this kind of community sense, colony sense, environment sense, eco sense, but you have to also be willing to accept that there are parts of you that you don't think of as you because they're not the voice in your head, right? That are also there, and unless you access them, unless you enlist them, then you have a lesser or limited capacity to move those energies as well. So part of this is grappling with the idea of just how much we rely on others.
And we are all connected.
Just even within our own bodies. So the same is true energetically. And connecting to that makes a big difference. I'm going to talk about these two continua here, and then we're going to do the first exercise of the day. And like anything, the language is iffy. English is not ideal for this purpose. So you'll just have to trust that I'm using these words as best I can. Controlling versus over-controlling. And words like controlling have all sorts of connotations, blah, blah, blah. But there's a difference between being in control and over-controlling. A number of you were probably behind the steering wheel on the way here, right? Is there a difference between controlling and over-controlling when your hands are on that wheel?
Well, absolutely.
Okay, and what are the outcomes?
Sometimes you end up in the ditch.
And the ditches were running with water today, so.
That's for drowning.
So the thing is that part of it is becoming aware of how you feel around, you know, controlling, and whether or not you need to be in control of every last thing. So, for example, One, there's someone whose initials might be Jim Dickinson, who is capable of moving vast quantities of energy. And one of his biggest failings in his early years of being a witch was he wanted to actually visualize, control, imagine, apply protocol and tool and concept to everything he was doing, because he wanted to be fully his artistic product. He wanted to be fully in control of how he was using his magical energy. He soon discovered that was not ideal. And because he had a lot of energy, it was not ideal in really, really visible ways, which actually was very instructive for all of us. So the thing is, it doesn't matter whether you start with a lot of magical energy or a small quantity, to the degree that you think that you can control it, well, it's kind of like, do you run the fastest when you're thinking about if every last moment, your knees, your feet, everything is in the proper shape and form? Do you play music best when you are, no.
You let go and get in the zone?
So you clearly you have to know how to do it, but you have to be able to find that balance point between controlling every last thing and being over-controlling, which means that none of it actually reaches its maximum potential. And that one you're going to come back to again and again and again. You're never over that one, because every time that you add capacity or every time that you add a new technique, you're going to go through your own process of trusting that you know it well enough to simply let it flow. But you actually do have to learn it first. You can't skip that part. Raw instinct only works in unusual circumstances that you can't replicate. Wild magic doesn't always work.
First out of time.
Adrenaline, you know, sometimes adrenaline lets you lift the car that's pinning your beloved. Sometimes adrenaline just makes you shake so you can't do anything.
Right.
It's not reliable. That's why you learn techniques.
Okay. Surrender versus abandon.
And I couldn't come up with better words, and that's why I'm going to have to explain this one a little bit better. So, if you actually manage to raise a large quantity of energy or plug yourself into a flow or become connected to a lot of work that's being, energetic work that's being done by a group of people, there is a question of surrendering to the process, which I'm using the word surrender in a good way, that this is going as it should, and I'm going to trust my instincts, I'm going to trust how this all goes, as opposed to abandon, which is like, I will throw myself into the great wave, and the ocean knows where to take me. down to the depths.
You are not the one.
Yeah.
Sadly. So the point is that there's sometimes where it was a question of, are you surrendering to the process and allowing it to go with the flow? A certain Frankie Goes to Hollywood song comes to mind. Should be hearing it bumping in your head now.
Yep.
Some of you at least. Or am I? Or are you abandoning that you have any accountability or responsibility, and it's just going to happen the way it's going to happen? Or I'm going to trust without having actually connected. Here's the thing, if you are connected to the process, where the powers, or what's going on, then you will know that you are surrendering. Abandon is usually slightly tinged with lack of self-empowerment or despair. I'm just going to throw myself in and hope for the best.
That sounds kind of like the things that those who would warn you against the evils of doing magic and witchcraft they think that it'll cause you to become abandoned.
Well,
it's an abdication of your...
Let Jesus take the wheel?
Yes. Yeah. You abdicate your...
And there's a difference between let Jesus take the wheel and there's a really huge wave, I'm going to align myself so I can body surf.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
As opposed to, I'm just throwing myself in the wave and it will know what to do with me.
There's kind of, in the surrender, you get a chance to evaluate.
I hope so. Yeah.
Because it's that, like, pause. where you can feel.
You can only, because the other thing is that let me compare it to this. If you are surrendering to the situation, then you are, that's an act that you are making with your eyes wide open, and you can think of it as you have a choice.
That's the you've done all the work ahead of time, and you've done everything that you can do, and then let the other things that you can't control.
And abandon is, I'm going to hope for the best.
I don't need to do the work, it's hard, and it's beyond what I can do. So.
And here's the part where I'll throw in a bit about, you have to figure out what you believe in, if you believe, and you don't have to believe anything to be a perfectly good witch, by the way. But you have to ask yourself, am I still belaboring thinking that somehow the universe is going to prevent me from doing something stupid?
Darwin.
I mean, I am kind of like leading it a little bit, and you know, it's a forced choice that I'm giving you. But realistically, if you believe that the universe means you well and will look out for you, you're in for some fun. Remember, from the perspective of energy and spirit, worst thing that can happen is you die and you get to try again. It's like you'll respawn. I mean, it's not. So from a broad span of time perspective, the universe does care about you, and energy and spirit is never lost. And the ocean refuses no river, all things return to source. That doesn't mean that you as an individual aren't going to have a hard time of it. Okay? So in one sense, you can say that the universe is fundamentally benign, but there are different ways of deciding what benign looks like. Right? Same is true with gods and goddesses. Just because one, I always say this at almost every class, just because a god or goddess is making eyes at you doesn't mean you have to say yes. Important consideration.
I make them work for me.
They better. Now, breathing and energy. Pure psychology and pure as above, so below. Everybody that has the as above, so below in a different manner. Alright. That means that everything that exists in a physical way also has an energetic equivalent. And in your body, when you breathe, you're taking in what's required for your metabolism to spark up and fire, right? You're taking in that corrosive, incredibly dangerous thing called oxygen, and from a chemical perspective, it is, in order to fire up that metabolism. Well, when you take in a breath, it's also a way to create a connection between that action, sympathetic magic of a sort. When you breathe, you're taking in something that helps you to generate energy. All magic is in part, all energy work is in part, trying to anchor and connect physical actions or symbolic actions with energetic actions. You probably can't in this moment easily feel the equivalent of your lungs and your aura. But you can make the association. As I breathe in, I am asking, I am connecting so that that energy from the universe is entering with that breath. You get the idea? So that there's a strong linkages, both psychologically and a sympathetic magic, which is why so much is done with breath work. And you've probably been set, you know, been told, you know, as you breathe in, pull in energy, yes? Okay. Please note, breath to blood to bone. A very simple exercise that we're about to do that helps to flush you full of energy to do work. And it simply begins with, as you take in a breath, imagine that you are bringing in sparkles of energy if you're visually inclined, or you're feeling a tingle or warmth. So that feel that as you take in each breath, that your lungs are pulling in energy from the environment, and don't ever feel like you're going to be taking more than your share because you are small. The earth is large. The universe is large, and there's more than enough life force and energy to bring in. So with each breath, I ask you to envision tingles, sparkles,
warmth. We'll do color in a bit. And just feel until your lungs feel like they're lighting up. Imagine that there's this bright glow in your chest. With each breath, it grows brighter. Doing this a little faster. If we were doing it as a just exercise by itself and not as part of a class, we'd spend more time just breathing, because you know what? It takes a while until you actually get the flow going and get into the rhythm of each breath bringing more life and more light and more power into your lungs until your lungs are glowing. The air is, you begin to notice that the air around you is thick and glowing with energy. And let's take the next step. And now, with each breath that you take in, see how that brilliance, see how that energy, see how that power that's in your lungs is beginning to move into your blood. So breath by breath and beat by beat of the heart, the power that is gathering in the lungs is moving into the blood. The blood slowly beginning to sparkle, beginning to glow. Every breath, every beat of the heart, see that brightness begin to spread throughout the body, throughout the self, your veins, your arteries, until you see that light is circulating in a full circuit around the entire body. Take another breath. See the brightness move from the lungs to the blood. Seeing the brightness move through veins, through arteries. Experience and see your whole body now is beginning to glow. The glow underneath your skin, your eyelids, down to your toes. Every piece of you, every part of you, glowing with brightness. Next step, take a breath, but now hold it, holding with your diaphragm, not your throat. And now see the brightness in your blood, the brightness in your lungs, moving inwards and into your bones. Imagine that your bones are like magnets, pulling the light from the blood, from the breath, seeing the bones in your hands, your legs, your ribs, your skull, your whole body. Each of the bones beginning to brighten, to glow until they are filled with energy. And now as you are breathing, let every breath move power from air to lungs to blood to bone. So it becomes a process of air to lungs to blood to bone. Just take a soft breath and let it out slow. And if you've closed your eyes, open them. And we're going to release doing the exercise. And then I'm going to say a couple things about it and ask you for some comments as well. And the lovely Jen can enter. We have one more chair, I believe. I guess by Howard. Do you want to just grab?
Yeah.
There's a place
on the couch, too.
Oh, is there?
Either one.
So before I start talking, any comments, questions, or something that you experienced?
I was a yoga teacher for a long time and got to the blood. I've never done the
bone.
The to the bone, which makes total sense because it was just a almost a 2D environment of, you know, you picture your body glowing with energy, and it was like, because I'm food oriented, like if you take a lady finger and then soak it in espresso, and you can just see the see it saturate and glow, you know, start going inward, and it was just, it was such a difference. It was a fullness of, you know, going from a 2D environment to a depth and a 3D, and it was very different.
It's tiramisu breathing.
I know.
That appeals to me.
Because I didn't close my eyes, the more sparkles everybody took, everybody's world expanded.
Go ahead.
I felt the resistance. I felt this right wall, and I couldn't get past it, so I decided, okay, I'll just let it.
It'll
and
change.
I just kept, I kept it, yes, and it turned into this blue wave like a waterfall of blue light. And I didn't try to get through the wall. I just accepted.
With all this, it's about doing as much as you can, knowing that you can do more later.
And I didn't feel like it stayed in my bones. I felt it started going out into my stomach.
Yeah, it does. It does. Everywhere.
I added lymph to the blood, because in the blood, lymph down through the lymph.
Yes. The thing is that a lot of times when people are given the instructions to fill themselves up with energy, they basically end up doing the energy equivalent of one tiny shallow breath. Pretty much. So the following the path of, you know, breath to blood to bone, and you can add more stuff if you like, is a way of actually encouraging you to actually take in the full quantity of energy that you are capable of holding at that time, rather than just one scant breath. The other bit is that when you actually incorporate the idea of the blood, the bone, and, you know, the whole flesh, then you end up actually supercharging and filling every cell of your body. And then, of course, it also starts filling your subtle body, because here's the thing. You also have capacity to store in your subtle bodies. But when you are living in an anchored in a physical body, that is your primary tool to make sure that power is then directed to the subtle bodies. Okay? And it does not take long to do, and I'm actually going to suggest that you consider some variation of the idea of breathing in the energy, seeing it glow, make your blood flow, fill your bones with glowing, and then filling your whole self with more and more and more. Is a quick warm-up exercise that you can do before doing magical work, before doing healing work, before doing most kinds of work. And you're not going to absorb any more than you can actually absorb. Yes, ma'am.
So, is this your own personal energy battery, or is this taking it from elsewhere to use?
So this is actually topping off your own personal energy batteries.
Okay.
And at the same time, making them kind of like a pass-through account.
Okay.
Because you basically, the way you're doing this is by creating a flow where you're taking in outside energy, and it's an open circuit, but you've also filled up your own, so that, because there's another thing about having your own batteries filled. So, okay, let me compare it to something else.
Solar batteries.
On a grid. We can go there in a second, if you have, think of this, the more energetic mass you have, all right, let's compare it to magnets. Okay. The bigger your bar magnet is, the more you'll have an influence on the magnetic fields around you. If you've already topped off your batteries so you're full as much as you can, then you have a larger bucket or larger sail. You have a greater capacity to interact with the flow that's all around us.
people don't realize either, for those who suffer from anxiety, the first thing you'll notice is they're taking very shallow breaths. And the first way to remedy it is to be conscious and breathe.
If you're doing it for that purpose, take it one breath deep and fast, and then let it out as slowly as you can. Equal breath is good for a lot of meditative stuff and a lot of magical stuff. But if you take a breath in fast and you let it out slowly, it makes your heart rate and blood pressure drop because it stimulates the vagus nerve. And that's usually one of the things that goes wonky during an anxiety moment.
Yes? I just wanted to share that that's how I've been panic attack free for some time.
Yeah.
I actually never had one. And the choice is with your breath, nothing else can help you. No pills, nothing.
It works.
Do you know about polyvagal theory?
Yeah.
Okay. I have lots of books if you need stuff on that.
Good stuff. The vagus nerve does a lot. So you can experiment with lymph, muscle, but the idea is that we often don't think that we have as much capacity as we do. And each of our subtle bodies is, I know you've run across people comparing the subtle bodies to Russian nesting dolls. Little dolls inside dolls inside dolls, right? Each of those chambers, each of those bodies has its own capacity. And a lot of times we think we're empty when all we've done is touched one layer. And if all of them are full, and then you start trying to move energy, a lot more energy responds because you have life calls to life and you've got more to call with. Okay? So this has fallen in. Any questions about that or keep going?
I have just one
thing, sir.
That I'm wondering. If you charge yourself up in this fashion, can it, at least for a while, help improve your physical capacity?
Yes, but yes, in a generic way, yes. Mm-hmm. If you, but you can also cheat.
Okay.
And so... all right, so like a number of years ago, we had to move a soapstone wood stove into Annie and Hamilton's house. And if you've been there, you know what it looks like.
Yeah, it's heavy.
And it's a narrow door. It's not a 3-foot door up there.
Right.
So Dickinson and I picked it up, went up the steps. I squished in my tummy, and we kind of like both kind of like squished ourselves flat while carrying the wood stove into their house.
Okay.
I'm not that strong. So before I'm about to do, or actually Jim sees me on a regular basis when I'm splitting firewood. Mm-hmm. It's like it's full of three, it has 3,000 knots, it's not one of the nice ones, doesn't want to split. Mm-hmm. So, and I hit it and it goes thunk. And you have the cartoon character vibration that goes up the arms and down the neck.
Know it well, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So then I bring in energy, I visualize red energy, I see it deposit itself in my biceps and in my tummy muscles, and then I hit again. And for a short span of time, I have enough strength to do that. For a short span of time, I can help Dickinson carry a ridiculously heavy wood stove with bad body mechanics into Annie and Hamilton's house. So like all things with magic, if you find the right pressure point or the right pivot point or the right thing, like a difference between the same amount of force piercing a piece of paper or not is whether or not it's concentrated as a pin prick or as a thumb, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a question of finding what place do I apply the power that I can summon in that moment, knowing that the closer it is to physicality, the more you have to be mindful of how long you can manage it and how short a span of time you have access to that energy. Bones can temporarily become more flexible or stronger as well, but for short spans of time. Affecting the physical world is much, much harder. But if you're going to need to do something physical, direct it at the physical thing. Or and you can also do cheap tricks. Then I'll give you an example, and then we'll move back on track. When we were on vacation in New Orleans, somebody noticed that the ice in my glass wasn't melting, even though we were getting the same drinks at the same time.
We were there.
Well, very simply, you know, you put an energy shield around your hand every time you pick up the glass so that you don't transfer the heat from your hand to the ice. It's a cheap trip, but, you know.
Several people noticed.
But I knew a sushi chef from Japan who said he did the same thing.
Because otherwise it would stick.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
Also, it protected the raw fish from getting too warm from your hands.
Yeah.
Now, how much thought and energy did you need to put into that, or you just kind of do it as an autonomic response at this point?
Anybody here knit, crochet? How long, once you know how to do it, how much energy does it take to focus on what you're doing? What about when you just first started?
Toe.
That's the way magic works. That's the way energy works. At first, it seems like I can't juggle so many things. I can't remember to do this. People who learn a musical instrument, I can't hold my mouth that way for the embouchure for that instrument.
Yep.
And then it becomes just a thing. So it starts hard and becomes easy. Right?
Onwards.
Color breathing. Man, this stuff goes in and out of fashion. Mm-hmm. Who's heard of the term color breathing?
Yeah, never.
Yeah. There used to be you couldn't walk into a shop without there being like books on color breathing, CDs on color breathing, videotapes, classes. You have to be of a certain age and been around certain communities to encounter this. So what was it really? All right. So is color used as a marker in things like chakras or candles or magic, all sorts of, but color means stuff.
Yeah.
And it's all bullshit in the sense that the colors aren't inherently those things, but we need to have a language to access those things. Okay? And one of the most common things you'll find is the idea, and by the way, if you are colorblind, there are tons of workarounds for this as well. But the idea is that for a lot of people, and they used to sell kits where, for people that were bad at visualizing colors, you had little colored cards that you would, and with words underneath about what that energy was about, and you would look at it. I'm not kidding. And you imagine, you do remember these. Okay.
A long time ago.
And let's say that you were trying to clear the mind and get ready to study or do stuff like that. So there'd be this bright yellow, you know, daffodil yellow card with things like thought and mind and clarity. And you'd stare at it if you couldn't visualize daffodil yellow easily. And as you'd stare at it, you'd imagine that every breath you took was that color, that the air was actually that color. What are you actually asking the universe to do? Take in energy that is of frequency associated with clarity and mental function, etc. But it was the prop. It was kind of like a portable altar, if you want to think of it that way. You're looking at a thing that has words on it, it has color on it, and you're breathing. Make sense? Then there was the advanced form, the color poor breathing. Which is actually a great way to convey to non-magical people what they should be doing. And the next step, so you've been doing these color breathing and you've also formed a layer of associations where this color means this, right? Which you probably already have your own ideas about certain colors meaning certain things, right? So then after you've been doing this color breathing where you learn to bring in that color and that frequency to supercharge yourself with that, then the next step was color pore breathing, which actually has other borrowings from other cultures, but the idea is that you're breathing in that energy through each pore of your body rather than just breathing in through your lung. So through every pore on your skin, aka your entire body, which is basically a way to convince the person to bring in energy from all directions.
Stop.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. I just grabbed her and she wasn't happy about it.
It's critters. You know, when sometimes when our three are playing, people that are unaccustomed to them think that they're looking at velociraptors.
Yeah.
Big jaws and chompy teeth.
It's called Freya's getting attention.
Yeah, but
if nobody yelps or starts limping, they would just play.
But the idea then is that you're doing poor breathing, which is really another way of saying that you are now, but what are you actually trying to do? You're actually trying to apply the concept of breathing to taking energy through every part of your subtle body. You're basically trying to say, the whole perimeter of my subtle body is a place through which energy may enter. And I'm creating the draw, the vacuum, the draw, the pull, of bringing in that energy, and we're using again the idea of breath as the concept to bring about the idea of drawing in energy.
So this, so your etheric body acts as the gateway between your subtle bodies and your physical body.
That's the interface. Yeah.
Okay. So that's your allowing your etheric to open to the subtle bodies and pull in.
How about this? You're instructing the semi-permeable membrane of your subtle bodies to specifically allow in that type of energy, to draw in that type of energy. Because unlike the semi-permeable membranes in our cells, in our body, which have, because they're physical, have particular pattern, particular shape, they have limitations around this is how they must function. One of the things, especially about the outer layers of the aura of the subtle bodies, are that those are completely changeable. Those are not bound by the same form restrictions as the physical body or the ones lower and closer to the physical body, so that you can open those up and draw in power. Now, it still has to cascade through every layer to get all the way down to where you can access it. But nonetheless, one of the things about our energy bodies, we can change their shape and qualities by will and by imagination in a way that is, you can argue that you can do the same thing with your physical body, but only within certain parameters.
Mm-hmm. So if you alter the outermost layers to pull in, just the fact that it's coming through your outermost layers should convince the innermost layers that everything's fine.
Right. By the way, so ultimately it does all cascade through. Mm-hmm. So the principle behind what was often perceived by people as being New Age fluff, right, is actually got encoded in it the idea of, basically this is an easy way to tell people how to adjust their energy sheaths, their subtle bodies, to draw in energy in a particular way, of a particular flavor, and to request that the energy or power that be brought in be of the type that is needed for what they are doing. Make sense? Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, all this energy drawing,
yep.
You have to know where it's safe to draw the energy and where you need to kind of like force yourself against it. Well,
such as?
I would draw in energy if I was out in nature.
Yeah.
Or within like a group where that's cool. But there are certain places I would not draw the energy because it's not the kind you want to take in.
Sure. All right. So you mean like not taking a really deep breath of air near the refineries as you go into Philly? just as a, you know.
Yeah.
But sure. I mean, there are environments where you have to be mindful of. But if you get really good at it, you can screen out a lot of the crap. Mm-hmm.
And that's when you need it more.
Air mask.
Well, and once again, we can change our energy so that it is more like a selective membrane or a selective filter so that we can exclude a lot of that. And indeed, one of the obstacles to becoming more effective at energy work is also learning how to remain open and sensitive and protected so that you're not exposed to the things that you don't want.
You pretty much have to filter what's coming in because you can't pull in unselectively energy or you will harm yourself.
Yes.
Like
yes.
if I wanted to do this exercise at work, I'd probably have to filter that considerable because I don't want.
And that too becomes second nature with time.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, and then I'll move on. Who here has been to Panthe Connor's Red Horror Stories about it? I mean, either one or the other. And for those who doesn't know what Panthe Con is at all, there we go, even better. So Panthe Con is
Pinky Polyfucker in your San Francisco.
Beyond that, all those things, and anywhere between 2,000 and 4,000 people, depending upon the year.
Mm.
11 to 16 things running simultaneously. No process whatsoever to vet for safety or knowledge whether the people teaching or running rituals or workshops know what they're doing. No organized effort on the part of the conference to clean the energy of the space, ward the energy of the space,
wow.
or to attend to things that slowly.
It's about fucking, I'm telling you.
That slowly build up over the course of the event.
Now he's going to have to, you know, slap a demonic today'sation on his. Recording.
No, I don't care. I mean, I'm only sharing the file with those of you that wish afterwards.
Yeah.
I'm not being burned to a CD or put up on CD Baby to.
Energy good, fuck bad.
Yeah.
Well, no. Let's just strike that one from the record.
Let me give you an example of, I had to help somebody clean up a room before she did her ritual because the thing immediately before her. Was a experimental demon summoning ritual.
Wow.
One, experimental demon summoning is not something you do. It is a ritual in a public setting. And also the person who was teaching it. The person who was teaching it was like 22 and had not trained with anyone formally.
So.
Got the grammar demon.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's
got
your
grammar demon, right?
So we now know that this is now a potentially highly charged and highly toxic environment. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Slightly.
Yeah.
So I regularly used to freak out T-Thorn Coil when I was at that event because I would barely eat and I would barely sleep because I was skimming energy off the crowd and just subsisting like a vampire on the energy.
You live to freak her out.
I do. But the point is, I was filtering. I mean, it was basically, you know, distilled water by the time it got to me.
You know what I noticed, and I don't think it's really energy play. But in certain spaces, I got real good. If I didn't want to filter what I was getting,
yep.
If you put a reverse mirror tube around a particular individual, it's fun to watch how they walk away because they can't stand their own energy.
Oh, yeah. There are lots of things you can do. And shall we go onwards?
Thank you. Sure.
All right. So a lot of times people forget that they have another quick and easy way to draw in energy, but I'm going to say this one works primarily if you are feeling like I don't have access to my psychism, or I'm not feeling particularly spiritual, or I'm not plugged in today. Because there, you know, we vary from day to day on what's going on, right? Okay. Now, when you were a little babykin, you had this nice soft spot, the fontanelle, right? Top of the head?
It smells good.
And the entry point for the crown chakra, ultimately. It's also one of the entry points for high frequency or divine energy or whatever language you like to use. So one of the simplest things to do is to remember that this area was once the portal that connected you to all that was above. And just take a moment if you're, by the way, I always like to do physical things whenever possible, because the more ways you can echo the message to different parts of yourself, the better. So literally holding your hands and forming the crown above your head and imagining that crown of light or that nimbus of light. And actually what you're really doing is you're using your hands to form an energetic funnel. See what I'm saying? And simply imagining that you're opening that top and allowing the energy from the above to flow down into you, down your column of your spine, down to the root, down to your toes, down to the earth, and simply do a flush of energy from the above through there. And do, and your hands aren't just there for prettiness. You actually put move some energy in there, so because you're actually making a funnel to draw that energy down into the fontanelle, into the crown chakra. And you can do that as a more lengthy and elaborate thing, or you can do that in the elevator in between things, just quickly to.
It's a good technique to perfect, if you would, aspect.
If you, yes, you have to be able to open that place readily to aspect well. And in this particular case, it's a quick way to connect yourself to the things that are the of the above that we sometimes shut down to. Mm. And it doesn't take much time. And if you are good at managing stuff like shaping things, then in another possibility you might want to experiment with is, especially if you're about to do healing work or ritual work or meditative work or something comparable, to having shaped that crown, that funnel, that lens, if you will, above your crown. Imagine that that energy form stays put when you take your hands down and walk around in the ritual or in the space with that in place. Okay?
You might be inclined to duck as you go through doorways.
True, what I did last time you left, there was all this energy up there, and I just sat there all night going,
mine. And it was tasty.
Oh, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Possibly dumb biological question.
No.
Does it matter as you were born if you come out head first, feet first, or cesarean?
Not at all. Mm-hmm.
Just was wondering if part of it was how you...
how you came out?
Everything isn't actually in one direction, it's an imagined direction.
So. Yeah. And honestly, there are changes depending upon how you came out, though. Mm. So, for example, I'll mention that in passing. I was a C-section baby. Anybody else? Only C-section baby in the room.
No, there's one.
Oh, yay! One more. Here is a thing that usually doesn't have a lasting impact, but you know how individuals are individuals, therefore it can. So here's the thing. There is no transition time from separating from the entire time that a child is in mom. They are completely encased within her subtle bodies. Mm-hmm. They're completely encased within her subtle bodies. And in the process of moving through the birth canal, whether it's head first or feet first, there is a movement not just out, but also through. So that there's a disengagement of connection between the child's subtle bodies and mom's subtle bodies. When the child is born C-section, they go from a in mom to holy fuck, the whole universe's energy just hit me all at once without any preparation. You understand what I'm saying? So that sometimes it's a different kind of shock. It's always a shock to come into the world, but it's a different kind of shock. So
I've read it's been studied that the differences are very important in the development of children, that the transition really matters.
And it also matters because the part that the studies can't, because they're scientific studies, depending upon the child's innate connection to energy or how aware they were in the moment of energy, the transition can be a shock of a different sort.
Curious about the mother's connection to the child, whether that has an effect too.
Huge.
Like what?
Huge.
Would it be different when you?
Huge. The other part there is that, and then we'll move on, is that the placenta itself has its own level of energy and consciousness, even though, because all living things have energy and consciousness, and that is also something that is also disrupted in that process as well. Mm-hmm. So. Better than dying, but there's a cost. There's a cost to all procedures.
Now we scheduled the mommy and me prenatal ego class.
There's a lot of magical stuff that
There's a lot of magical stuff associated.
Yeah. Onwards. And
I'm keeping track of time because we actually are going to get through
as many things as possible. So I'm going to say the three most common sources of power for people. Are the mind, using imagination, language, etc., voice, primarily chanting and toning and motion. If you are going to raise, shape, move, manage energy, then chances are you're going to be using one, two, or all three of these. And I encourage all three whenever possible. The more engagement you have, the more capacity you have to impact, because many parts of you that are actually more sensitive, more in plugged into power, aren't verbal, or operate in a very different way than your normal waking consciousness. So the more ways you reiterate the same message, whether that's through tone and chanting and visualization and symbolic motion, the more ways you signal to the other parts of you, this is what we are doing, the more likely it is that you will enlist them in doing the work with you and in a way that is more productive.
Well, in essence, that's why the whole altar and all the implements
all the stuff
is to force your consciousness in that space.
Yeah.
When hopefully you don't come across too many times, you have no implements and you got to do it.
And then, but you still have your mind,
mm-hmm.
you still have your voice,
mm-hmm.
And you still have the capacity mm-hmm. to move. Mm-hmm. Now, I used to give a class many years ago, and I have literally done it in like about 26, 27 years, that I used to do at conferences that was a how to get over yourself, because people would say, I can't do that, it looks silly, or I feel stupid doing it, which is, you know what, right? So I had a class that basically it was just an hour and a half of role-playing, doing things in ritual, and getting people to not feel stupid waving around a wand or chanting in with a voice that they didn't feel was particularly appealing, or any number of things, or moving in ritual dance, which might not get you on TV, but does the job in ritual. So the point is that there's also a question of how many ways do you self-censor or self-judge how your work is in ritual. Yes?
Getting your mind where it needs to be first.
Uh-huh.
Doing like a run through of the ritual beforehand be a way to get, I guess, like everybody on the same page as far as your shadow bodies are concerned?
So, yes and no. Let me give you both. Because there's never a simple answer. So, I mean, it depends on the nature of the ritual. There's sometimes where the ritual will work best if there's some things which are relatively spontaneous or unplanned or contain elements of that. By the way, I only believe in improvisation if you already know how to do the thing. In other words, it's kind of like music. Musicians can create and riff off of each other because they already know the basic structures of the chord progressions and how to move from one key to another, etc. So then they can go crazy because they have the structure built in.
Grateful Dead did that all the time. Their jams.
Let's not forget the band.
Well, that's it. They just have this whole song and then go
yeah.
into this.
But it's possible. But here's the thing. If you want to really do it full force, So a lot of times before a ritual, I will actually read the ritual. And as I'm sitting there reading the ritual to myself, I will close my eyes and I will actually visualize as realistically as possible the entire ritual, step by step, person by person, with the shape of it. But what I'm actually doing is I'm laying down an energetic trace. I'm creating a thought form of the ritual, which is basically then becomes the invisible teleprompter during the ritual. So in addition to the purely learning it, becoming comfortable with it so that you, because if you know it well, you feel more comfortable to actually commit to it or be vulnerable to certain parts of it, et cetera, but also the process of moving through it in your mind is a way of actually laying down a track so that it can be followed as energetic guidance during the ritual itself.
Energetically and physically.
And physically.
Because it's nice to run through it in your mind in 3D to make sure nobody's like running into each other.
And here's the part. Here's the part where you need to know where your visualization capacity is at that moment. So, for example, recently I was trying to explain a rather elaborate ritual to a group of people, and periodically people would make a suggestion or object to something, and then I would stop and I would say, wait a minute, no, that's not the way it would work. So, and then I realized, I'm going to pull out paper and start drawing pictures because the thing that you're objecting to isn't physically possible. But I can see it in my head. Here's the thing. It's possible for some people, like for example, if I go outside to a garden, I can close my eyes and look and say, yeah. In 3 years, those perennials will be 2 feet high. That'll be about another 6 inches tall. Because I know the shape of those things well enough that it sticks in my head. Sometimes when you're going over the outline for a ritual or something, you think you can see it in your head. But you know what? You can imagine anything on the astral. The trick is when you try to imagine it as it would go, as it would play in meat space, as it would play in physical space. With this is how far things are apart, and at this distance, that's how big something would look, or how loud that would be. And so the augment. Sometimes the way you augment that is by actually drawing and you know what I'm saying. Or the dreaded thing that I did for BTW Sacred Space Ritual, where next to every item, not only are there the instructions, but there's the backup instructions, what you're supposed to be doing energetically, and then there's how many minutes for each section.
Wow.
Because that's the only way to make sure that works. Going to say something about motion and voice.
And part of this is because culture has made it cheesy.
How many times have you seen, in fantasy novels that you're reading or anime or whatever, and people are doing all sorts of crazy shit with their hands or waving sticks around and I will not be able to control my reaction if somebody decides to borrow moves from the magicians.
Yeah.
Besides the fact that, anyway. Yes. However, if you do not commit to the motion, don't do it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as much as I'm encouraging you to move, to use your voice in chanting or toning or doing what, it is worse if you don't commit to it. What do I mean by that? Let's say that you are trying to, draw down something and you're making some kind of motions and trying to pull it down, right? If you don't actually believe the motion that you're making, are you actually assisting yourself? No, you're not moving the energy, you're not opening your consciousness. You are telling yourself, I'm looking like a doofus, I've got to stop. I'm not kidding.
It's the same thing, sir, if it hurts too much.
It is. Now, mind you, you can explore what do I need to do to feel comfortable doing those things. Because you know what? If you look at a variety of other streams of religion or spirituality, they do all sorts of things that look really doofusy. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm sorry, the first time as a child I saw a Sufi dervish, I went, mm-hmm. Now I think it's really cool. The first time I saw some of the headgear in some religions, I went,
just to bring up a point for something that Shagma had brought up years ago, and one of my first things someone had, I walked in and she said, "I stop wearing your weird, you don't have to do something to get attention that's the wrong kind of energy. If you're doing this hand motion because it really means something to
that's
you,
a different thing.
And it's supposed to actually have a purpose, rock on. If you're doing it because you're like, ooh, everybody's going to look at me and I'm really cool because I know how to do this thing from the magicians, a person like me who's in the room now has become completely distracted from the working and I want to stab you. I mean, seriously, it makes me actually very angry because you're taking my energy now to draw it to you so you could be the center of attention instead of the working.
And now we have the two poles of the problem. We have the it looks silly and you're distracting other people and maybe you don't mean it. And there's the other thing, is like, this is something that's supposed to be the right motion, looks meaningful, but I feel like a doofus doing it. So you have to find ways to actually commit to using the motion and actually empowering it. And the best way I know to do that is, if you are not actually visualizing something or feeling something while you're doing it, then all you're doing is moving for nothing. Ask yourself, am I actually engaging it? If you are, then you begin to trust that what you're actually doing is real and valid and useful. The other thing is, and we may do it later today, I'm going to kill you. If you call it chanting or toning, and it lasts 35 seconds. I'm exaggerating. Yeah. But I cannot tell you how many times it's like, okay, are we going to take off yet? Are we there? And suddenly, three lines of the song repeated thrice, and that's the chanting. And even groups that like to chant or like to tone, we often tend to abbreviate and make it much too short, because until you and whoever else, if there is, it could be solo then, so I'm not going to say, the same is true solo, though it's more common with groups, you actually have to be there long enough for it to do something. So there's some stupid commercial that I saw somewhere of, wouldn't it be great if you only needed to eat one broccoli florette to change your diet, or do one sit-up and that counted as your exercise, right?
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
No.
So the other thing about the physical world is that the length of time that you need to be toning, chanting, visualizing, moving the energy, well, how long would it take for you to actually warm up and even break a little sweat if you were doing something physical? Right? So ask yourself, are you actually allowing for enough time for the flow to begin and for it to take shape and to build up? A lot of times, either because of embarrassment or who knows, I don't know what, it's abbreviated before it actually gets to the place. Or we got criticized 1 year at Free Spirit, post one of our, it wasn't main ritual, it was one of our side rituals we did 1 year, and actually got reported to the organizers because somebody thought we did something really bad and we're causing strange things to happen in time and space. We actually raised energy. And the person felt something happen. And because they actually felt something happening for the first time after going to gatherings for 20 years.
Yeah.
So the thing is, ask yourself, are you allowing enough time for it to happen? You don't warm up in by doing one stretch. You don't actually begin to raise the power until you let it go for a while. So I challenge you to look at the times that you do toning or chanting or even motion, and discover, even if it's slightly uncomfortable, make it last a little bit longer and a little bit longer and a little bit longer. And especially when it comes to using your voice or your body, you may find you have to have new coping skills. In the same way that if you're toning or chanting for a long time, you don't do the same volume, or you don't try to get all high notes all the time. Or if you are doing physical activity, how you have to sometimes slow down so that you can then take a breather, not stop all the way. You know what I'm saying? Management also means managing how you express that way.
Time for a break?
Probably. It is... Yeah, let's take a break. It's a good length of file. That would be good.